from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
It's time now to go beyond the headlines. And for the next 2 hours, go where every sports fan wants to go. Behind the scenes and into the practice facilities, locker rooms, coaches' offices, and press boxes to get the info before anyone else. This is the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
A little spicy in the chat this morning.
This is a little spicy, Kyle. We need to, like straight up. People, if you give Deadpool spoilers in the chat, I'm just gonna ban you.
Yeah, no, you get blocked for life.
Blocked. Yeah,
that's easy work for me. We have some interesting NBA stuff. We got Olympics starting. We have some 49ers training camp notes. Mm. We have a buddy of mine, a very good friend of mine, Tony Simeone. He is a broadcaster for NBC, actually broadcasting an Olympic event. This is really cool. We're going to have him on mostly to talk. He's broadcasting field hockey. And we're going to ask him, what?
Maybe he can explain that and handball to us in one conversation.
That would be great. Yeah, he is our Olympic czar. He's boots on the ground for us covering the Olympics for NBC. Yeah, really excited to talk to Tony. That's coming up at 10:30. But before we get to any of that, more importantly, there's no scummier thing you can do to me than... And within reason,
yeah,
there are a lot of awful things you can do to somebody, but within the scope of entertainment, posting spoilers online is trash. Why would you do that? I just don't understand it, because the reason this comes up is because Carlin versus Joe today, they were talking about Deadpool.
Yeah.
And James, you said, hey, no spoilers. And so I just turned it down.
That's
just
right.
Just in case. I don't think they were going there. I don't think they were going to do spoilers.
But you never know.
No, you don't.
All right.
Yeah, and there's a statute of limitations, to be sure.
Oh, yeah.
If somebody's talking about the ending of Infinity War, well, like, that's on you. You haven't seen it. That movie's been out for 6 years now.
Yeah, for years. Yeah,
that's a you problem.
Yep.
But at this point... Deadpool versus Wolverine?
I think it's Deadpool called? And Wolverine.
The new Deadpool movie just came out.
Yep.
I understand you want to talk about it. I understand you want to make little jokes about it. And if you're going to do that, please keep in mind that there are people who can't go to the theater right away.
Nope.
And who may not be able to go to the theater for a couple of weeks. It's just not that hard to not be a jerk. I'm not even going to spoil this because anybody who cares has seen it at this point, but still, it just makes me feel icky. When I went to go see Star Wars The Force Awakens, episode 7 of the newer trilogy, that's the first of the three that came out.
Yes.
And when I went and saw that, so it was supposed to come out Friday, but on movies like that, they start the showings like Thursday.
Night. Yeah, Thursday evening.
I went 2 p.m. on Thursday was our showtime. So I hadn't watched all the Star Wars movies in a long time. So I binge watched the Star Wars movies a couple of days leading up. So I was all ready. I was all fired up. We get there early. We're watching people in costume. They're fighting with lightsabers and they're doing a whole thing. It was so much fun. We're having a blast. I jump on social media and I'm scrolling and somebody puts the spoiler from the movie just in plain text.
Oh, I want them kicked off of social media.
Yeah, and I get if you hated that movie and you think it's an abomination, whatever, that's your prerogative. I don't care. It's the principle of that. Well, why? Yeah. Why would you do that?
Yeah.
It's just a jerk move. So don't post spoilers on the internet.
You know, it's funny. Somebody in the chat here mentions Kaiser Sose, right? Which is a character from The Usual Suspects. What phenomenal movie. So I made my oldest watch this with me the other day. And we were watching, and it's such a good movie still. It just holds up. It's like crazy good. It holds up except for the fact that Kevin Spacey is who he is, and like you can have your feelings that way, right?
Yeah.
But the modern kid, they look down at their phone so much that when you get to the end of the movie, and it starts to unfold.
Yeah.
And you've seen
it. I've
never
seen it.
Okay. It starts to unfold. You need to put your phone down. And I'm like, put your phone down now. He's like, why? And I'm like, put it down now. You need to watch.
Yeah.
And it unfolds in this dramatic fashion at the end.
Right.
But you have to be watching to actually see the unfolding of it.
Of course.
So, but I won't spoil it for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I will find a way to fit that into my movie challenge.
It needs to be in your movie challenge because it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Next week I'll bring in that book, by the way. We can run through it. Okay. What I've started doing, because I am not of your son's generation, but I am of the generation where I had a cell phone starting in sixth grade.
Yeah.
Seventh grade, maybe. Maybe seventh. Whatever it was. I've had a cell phone basically my whole life. And I am addicted to mine.
Oh, yeah.
It is my brain has been warped to want to, I'll just grab it and I'll just sit here. I'm not even looking at it. I unlock it and I'm just moving the screen around. I'm not even doing anything. It's just mindless. Like it's just, right. So I'm addicted to the, and I understand. I'm not in denial. I get it. So one of the things I've done for when we watch movies, because I'll be interested in the movie, but I'll look and I'll be like, wonder if anything happened in the sports world. And I just, because that's how my brain has rotted.
Yeah, oh yeah.
My brain has rotted to that point. I don't want to say rotted because you can come out of this. There's ways to
reset.
Yeah, reset.
Do a hard reset of the brain. Yes.
So there's ways to do that. I have not. No. So one of the things I'm doing now is when my wife and I are going to watch a movie, I set my phone. Apple has this feature where when you're driving, you can set it to driving mode or it will automatically detect that you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
And you can create an automated message that gets sent to anybody who sends you a text.
Yep.
And so I just do that because my anxiety is you're going to reach out about something, or Charlie's going to reach out about something, or D-Lo or Casey or somebody with work, they're going to hit me up needing something and I'm just going to have not responded.
Oh, yeah.
That's my... I'm like... So... this automated message just says, hey, this is an automated message. I'm either driving, sleeping, or unplugging.
I actually have it.
Oh, do you have it?
I got hit with it yesterday, the day before. I think it was yesterday.
Might have been this morning.
It was, it starts with yo.
Yes.
Which is something I enjoy. Yo, this is an automated message. I'm either driving, unplugging, or sleeping, or all of the above. I'll circle back ASAP.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it, Kyle.
Yeah. So that's my, so I set that upstairs and I get downstairs and I will watch the film.
Yeah.
So that's the way I have to do it. Do I wish I had the willpower to just set the phone? Because that's what I tried first. I tried setting it on the counter, but then this would inevitably happen. I'm sitting on my couch because we have a sectional couch and I sit in the L. So my feet are going this way while I'm relaxed back. And the counter's over here to the left. And the TV is in front of me. And inevitably, I start looking over.
It'll light up.
No, I just look at, is that a buzz? Did that buzz? Or I'll get up to get water. And I walk by the counter and I open my phone. And then I'm standing there, just a movie going.
Yeah.
Movie that I care about. Characters I'm invested in happening. Their lives are playing out. And I'm just, just scrolling. Just, oh, here's a funny Twitter. Oh, I've got a funny joke to make about that. Wait, what is this in reference to? Okay, hang on. Got to Google that real quick. Next thing I know, I've been standing there for 15 minutes. I look up and somebody's head is being chopped off and I don't know what happened.
Yes. So now you got to go backwards. But
it's
then
pretty
you
rare
can't.
That I watch a movie where people's heads get chopped off. I don't know why I went with that trope.
Game of Thrones.
Nah, there you go. Good. Right. Nice, dude. Yeah. Thanks. So yeah, that's what
it happens to a character. I won't tell you who it is, though.
when I watched Game of Thrones, I swear to God, we have sports coming. When I watched Game of Thrones, I went into it. I caught up right before season 6 started.
Okay.
So I blew through 5 seasons of Game of Thrones in like 2 weeks.
Oh yeah.
Just
I can do that just to like do. Hey, I need to rewatch just to catch up, and I'll just like boom.
Yeah. Done. Just rip through it.
Yeah.
So I was lucky because I went in not knowing really anything because I had seen the tweets about it, but I had never like consumed them in my brain. I'd never like filed them away. Mm-hmm. The only thing I knew, spoiler alert, everybody, for Game of Thrones, the first, not House of the Dragon.
Yep.
Game of Thrones. The only thing I knew was that Jon Snow didn't, again, turn your radio or computer down if you're in the middle of Game of Thrones for the first time. In 3, 2, 1. I knew that Jon Snow didn't actually die when he gets stabbed.
Okay.
Okay, we're back. That was it, though. I knew a couple of references. I knew the hold the door reference, but I didn't know what it was. And that was kind of it. Mm. And I knew the Red Wedding. I knew that was a thing. Didn't know what it was. So when that happened, it was like, whoa!
Yeah.
Ah!
What is happening?
No!
No!
And after the Red Wedding happened, literally, scene ends, and me and my buddy were going to go, whatever, I forget, what my buddy came over, and scene ends, he knocks on my door, and is like, all right, you ready to go?
Oh.
Like, no!
No,
I need a minute, dog!
I need to unpack some stuff here.
It was funny, because he comes in, and he's like, what's up? And I'm like, He's a big Game of Thrones guy. He's the one that wanted to make me watch it. And he's like, hey, what's up? And I was like, Red Wedding, dude. And his face dropped like I just told him that I lost my dog.
Oh.
He was like, oh my God, man, you wanna sit down?
Okay?
You wanna talk about it? Man. Very emotional. Anyways, don't post spoilers online.
That's right. Don't be that guy.
Right. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. Jiffy Lube sponsors the show. We're called The Insiders. We're hanging out with you until noon today. Tim Kawakami is getting a lot of burn on this show this week. He hosts The TK Show. It's an Odyssey podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your pods. And one of the appeals of Tim Kawakami's podcast is that he interviews the biggest names in sports.
Mm-hmm.
Has a good relationship with Steve Kerr, Joe Lacob, Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, Jim Harbaugh. He's had on a bunch of times. And he gets good interviews out of these guys. Well, he had Joe Lacob on. And I was listening to the Joe Lacob interview on the way in. And I'm not going to get into the minutiae of the Warriors situation. I want to talk about some of the Joe Lacob stuff that matters on an NBA level. He, in that interview with Tim Kawakami, again, this is Warriors owner Joe Lacob, said that, A, thrilled with the aprons. You could tell. Just smitten that he has an excuse to get below the tax or the first apron, certainly.
Okay.
I didn't realize they had gotten under the tax line.
Yeah.
That's for a team that was paying $500,000 for their roster to now, I think they're just over the tax now.
Yeah, but I mean, that's a far cry from the $176 million or whatever they paid just in luxury tax last year. Another like 220 in salary.
Insane.
It was like they're at almost 400 million
yeah.
compared to the Kings at like 147.
He said the last 3 years, the last 4 years, whatever, I think since KD left, he said they've paid like $700 million just in luxury tax.
Oh.
Oh my God. So, but he says in there, if you're going to compete and win, no problem doing that.
Yeah.
But we missed the playoffs last year, so we're not doing it. All right, it makes sense. But anyways, he talks about how the NBA is trending toward the NFL in terms of parity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal of every league.
Yeah.
Right? You want, in an ideal world, every team goes 500 and then every team is exactly the same, and every playoff series goes to seven games, and it's thrilling. But I was thinking about that, and I don't think that's right. I don't think parity is good. I think there needs to be, in the NBA specifically, I don't necessarily feel this way about the NFL, but in the NBA specifically, I think parity lends itself to a Heat Nuggets finals where you have a bunch of people who don't care, and it wasn't a particularly good series. Or you have the Mavericks coming out of the West to face a Boston team that they had no business facing. Like they weren't good enough. And Boston steamrolls them. And I think overall the NBA is just better when there's that very clear villain or those two very clear teams that everybody wants to see fall.
Everyone's chasing.
Yeah, and then if those two teams don't fall in the conference in the playoffs leading up to the finals, then you have a great finals matchup between these two titans. Mm. That's what I think the NBA is at its most fun.
I kind of feel like I get what you're saying. Parity is one thing, but I want a competitive balance, right? I think that if you look in the league, there are so many games where you're watching the Kings play some random team, whoever it might be. And they
The Charlotte Hornets are the most random team.
Okay, Charlotte. But even like the Atlanta Hawks, they'll go to Atlanta and there's 8,000 fans and there's no vibe and there's nothing. And you're like, what is happening? Because you go to a game in Sacramento and outside of a couple of years where it's, you know, the team was just had been so bad for so long and had tried to move and all these things.
Yeah.
But outside of that, like, The stadium is usually packed, and the vibe is cool, and it's fun. And, you know, we've talked about this. Like, Scott Moak will tell you, like, their goal is that every single night they understand that there are probably a couple of hundred kids that are at a game for the first time ever. And this is, you need to make a first impression and get them to love coming to a game, like, right then. You have one opportunity to put a stamp on something, to make it feel like it's... it's somewhere they want to keep coming back to, and they cater to that. The fact that there are people who have never been to a game who are spending so much of their hard-earned money, or somebody is spending so much hard-earned money to get people there to a game, and you need to give them an experience. So, yeah, I feel like you look around the league, though, and that's not the way it is everywhere. And there are fan bases that don't show up like Sacramento. And it's really, really odd to see that. But you need to cherish it in Sacramento and understand that. So I wish, though, that the competitive balance was there, because for the Kings to go into the luxury tax and to get to the second apron and to do all that stuff, they have to have a team that's going to make the second or third round. In the NBA,
yeah, minimum,
you don't break even unless you make it to the first round. And sometimes, as a franchise, you don't even break even until the second round. And guys like Lakeup are willing to spend all this money. He's taking a huge loss to win. That's what, like, being a billionaire should be about. It's like, hey, I've got this fun toy that I keep, you know, changing the paint on this really expensive car just because I can.
Right.
And because I want it to look different and be cool.
Sure.
But, like, when it comes to your sports team, that's where... like, I do get that it's a business, and I do get that a lot of the teams in the NBA are legacy teams that are teams that have, you know, been handed down from family members and stuff. And so maybe you don't have the billions to spend and you can't keep up with the Joneses. But I like parity a little bit, but I like competitive fairness where everyone has at least an opportunity that they can spend.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where eventually, because year one, and maybe even year two and three, is about teams maneuvering to figure out how to operate within this new CBA, this new system where the aprons are create higher penalties for being above the tax. And I think what we'll see are teams like Charlotte, Atlanta, Portland, I guess, although Portland's been good recently. But anyways, teams that these smaller market teams having a chance to go get Brandon Ingram, because hey, you don't have to max out Brandon Ingram now to get him on your team, because the good teams are already expensive and they're not going to go add a Brandon Ingram to go to the second apron because they don't think Brandon Ingram's going to get him over the top. And I think that's maybe what we'll see play out. But I think ultimately in the NBA, I think the best thing that could happen for just kind of the, not necessarily the health of the league, but just as a fan to get fired up, is if Boston goes and repeats next year.
Hmm.
And they become this team that is now this juggernaut. Because I think there are still people who look at Boston from this year and go, yeah, but I mean, who did they play? I mean,
for
yeah.
some reason, you feel it with that team. I don't know what it is about that team where you're mm-hmm. like, I mean, they're really, really, really good.
They're awesome.
But they have yet to reach like legendary status.
Which is
very yeah. strange because they have made it deep in the playoffs right. multiple times.
Yeah.
But now they get over the hump and you're like, okay.
Well, and that's why I think they need to win another one
yeah.
or make another deep run because you had Golden State who was god awful forever. And then they lose in the second round in 2014 or 2013, and they lose in the first round in 2014, win that title in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And I was down in Arizona at this time, but the people I knew and I was friends with were like, hell yeah, that's awesome. A new team won. Hey, dude, good for you. Nice. But then the next year they start 24-0, and all this talk of them chasing 72-10.
Mm.
And having the unanimous MVP, it became more like, okay, this is old now. This kind of getting tired of this. And then they smoke the 3-1 lead, and then they get Kevin Durant, and it was just downhill from there. That's where I think Boston is still on that rise. Boston's still like that. Hey, they made it over the hump. Nice. And there are still people going, yeah, but they played Indiana, who wasn't ready. The Sixers were banged up. They played Miami, who didn't have Jimmy Butler. Like, yeah, just nah. So I think if they go win this year, this next season, then they'll fall into that villain category where, okay, that's what everybody's chasing. Now everybody's locked into the finals to see if somebody can knock off Boston.
That's possible. For me, I think the problem, too, with Boston is every single position they have is like stacked. Like when they go out and they add Porzingis, and for some reason Porzingis worked there where he hasn't been a true winner in other spots.
Mm-hmm.
He just figured it out or the team around him was so good that they figured it out. But you have, they go out, they extend Derek White, they extend Drew Holiday, they extend all of their talent is there forever. This team is going to be really good. They're going to pay for it for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to have draft picks. There's going to be like the second apron is like their name now.
It's
the Boston second apron Celtics.
It's so funny hearing all these teams talk about the second apron. And then you've got Boston with Jaylen Brown, 300 plus million.
Five guys,
Jason
30
Tatum,
million.
300 plus million. And they're just dishing out these cuts. Like, wait a minute. Hey.
They just paid Sam Hauser like 4-year 45. You're like, what? Like, why are we paying him that much? Like, what's happening? But I think my point is that they're the only team that's like this all of a sudden. Like,
yes.
there isn't another Boston Celtics. And when you got to, like, the Warriors in their heyday, there was always LeBron and the Cavs. And so, yeah, did we get bored of watching the same two teams battle in the finals, like, four consecutive seasons? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that got boring. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you had no idea who was going to win because they were both so good that mm-hmm. one team has the greatest player on earth, the other team has three or four of the greatest players mm-hmm. on earth, and so there's this like epic battle.
Mm-hmm.
Like there has to be some other team that steps up and becomes that.
Yeah.
And as of today, I don't know who that would be. Like we can talk about the Denver Nuggets, but we all know that it's Denver Nuggets. It's like one superstar and realistically a bunch of guys who are just under mm-hmm. all-star level. Like it's a whole bunch of like non-all-stars.
And then they lost Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, who is a player that when we would talk about the Nuggets,
yeah,
it was Jokic and Murray and Aaron Gordon and KCP. And now that KCP element is gone and replacing it might not be super easy.
Well, that and they had Bruce Brown the year before.
Yep.
So you're starting to see sort of, there are two ways that teams sort of fade. The first is that they get old. Sorry, Warriors, you got old.
Mm-hmm.
The second is that you have attrition. You lose players because anytime you win a championship, people now value your players more.
Of course.
And they offer them more money and you lose them.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens more in the NFL where a guy will, go win the MVP of the Super Bowl. And next thing you know, he gets some monster contract to go somewhere else and be really bad because he really wasn't that good. He just had a good day.
Mm-hmm.
But in the NBA, like you start losing pieces left and right and you got to backfill. But the problem is that you won a championship. So now your salaries are climbing. the guys that you do have that you can pay, you're paying more than maybe you should. And so like the NBA has like a life cycle, and it's a very small life cycle, and there's not a way to replace. Even like the NFL has, like the 49ers are a linebacker factory.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to just create another one and another one and another one. They can find a fifth round pick who's a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
But the NBA isn't that way.
Right.
And so once you start losing pieces, it's very difficult to replace those pieces.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so parity. I don't know if it's going to be fully like the NFL, but I certainly think the aprons are going to help balance the field a little bit.
Yeah, I sure hope so. You know, you were just talking about LeBron and those Cavs teams from 2015 to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
There's a universe not that much departed from this one where LeBron is sitting there with like 7 or 8 rings right now.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
It's kind of wild.
I mean,
the 2017 Cavs are good as hell, dude.
That's
a really freaking
good team. I was in the locker
team.
Room when they won.
In 16?
Yeah, in Oakland.
Yeah.
Like Usher and Jamie Foxx were in the locker room wearing like,
sure.
like, hey, what's up, guys? Hey, what's happening? Like spraying
yeah, sure.
champagne and stuff. I mean, it was wild to be in the locker room for that. I remember we were watching, me and Iman Shumpert were watching video of a Cleveland fan who stole a fire truck and was driving through Cleveland with a fire truck
That's
celebrating.
Nice.
And yeah. I was, me and Iman Shumpert were watching video on my phone of this happening.
Yeah.
Like the whole vibe was crazy and stuff, but. Like,
but if Kyrie and Kevin Love are healthy in 15, they could win that one.
Yeah,
they won in 16. Kevin Durant doesn't go to the Warriors. They might win the next 2 or 3.
Yeah. Man. But see, the again,
that's crazy.
You need a second villain. Mm-hmm. And as of right now, I think we can all look at the Celtics and go, they're going to be unmatched for a while.
Seems that way. Although, maybe it's the Knicks.
Maybe.
I'm just all in on the Knicks.
Okay, you're all in on the
I'm
the Villanova 4.
Oh, they did all go to Villanova, huh? Mm. Yeah, they did.
They did
Jalen Brunson, did Dante DiVincenzo, Mikal Bridges?
Yeah,
I'm missing one.
Josh
Help me
Hart.
Out. Josh Hart, thank you.
They all went to Villanova. Did you not know that, Kyle?
That's crazy. How does no more people should talk about
Why
this?
Why is that not on a shirt?
That's crazy. Has anyone suggested that maybe Jay Wright become the coach?
That's that's a good idea. Yeah. Maybe Jay Wright. Yeah, I don't know.
Hey, I think we're on to something.
We already have a guest here.
Do we really?
He's already in the
God, I love
He shows up early. He shows up early. Look at that.
God.
Spectacular.
I'm so excited. I have not talked to Tony. Well, we chat, but I haven't seen him in 10 years maybe.
Wow.
Yeah, probably 9-10 years now.
Okay.
And he is taken off. He has a wonderful life and a wonderful career, and he's getting to broadcast the Olympics.
It's amazing.
And as a person, look, I don't know what your hopes and dreams were as a child, but for me, I wanted to be a broadcaster. That's what I did in college. I interned with the Stockton Ports with Zach Beirute, the voice of the Sacramento RiverCats now.
Mm-hmm.
I called games in the minors. Like, that was what I wanted to do. And then eventually my life went a different direction. And Tony is living that out.
Mm.
And now he's in Connecticut broadcasting the Olympics. So A, I'm excited to talk to him about his journey. B, field hockey. What is it?
What is it?
Let's talk about it. And then just kind of the preparations for that. And of course, we got to talk about J.J. Redick, the world's number one J.J. Redick fan.
That's wild.
And that's not even a bit. Like, that's not even it. He is number one in the world ranking.
He's got Redick jerseys.
Absolutely. He's drawn up pin downs right now.
All right.
All right. Tony Simeone, NBC broadcaster. He's broadcasting the Olympics. He's going to join us next on The Insiders. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube here on ESPN 1320. Sacramento Sports Leader.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, back to the Insiders with James Hamm and Kyle Madsen. Brought to you by Jiffy Lube on ESPN 1320.
Oh, what a treat. James Hamm, Kyle Madsen, and Tony Simeone, voice of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, and Olympic broadcaster. That's a cool thing, dude. You have that on your resume now. You're just an Olympic broadcaster. Congrats.
Well, you know, actually, thank you. It's great to see you. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, you as well.
Technically, we learned, actually, my partner and I, my analyst Suzanne Bush, who played college field hockey, learned that you're technically not an Olympian until you set foot on the pitch. So until tomorrow's first game, I am technically not an Olympic broadcaster. So I'm an Olympic broadcaster in waiting, is kind of how they've been hazing me around here.
Okay, so, great. You're the Olympic broadcaster elect. I love that. So you're doing field hockey. I have we have so many questions.
Sure.
How did you get here? Why field hockey?
Yeah, it's a great question.
Thank you.
I credit a lot of it to the relationship I've been fortunate enough to forge with NBC. Obviously, Notre Dame's had a great relationship with NBC for now 30 plus years. And so with my work with Notre Dame over the last 7 or 8 years, that's put me in a position to kind of get some opportunities. So I do the hockey, most notably, that's on Peacock, used to be on NBCSN with NBC. The people there have been really kind to me over the years. And I kind of always just said, you know, obviously, like you were alluding to during a break, Kyle, the Olympics is kind of the pinnacle of sports in a lot of people's eyes. And everyone knows NBC does the Olympics. So every chance I had, say, hey, if you ever need Olympics help, because I do a lot of it out of Connecticut now and not Paris, that basically, if you need someone to help out, I'd love to be a part of it. And then just one day, I think in April, they reached out and said, hey, could you help us out with this? And it didn't take long to say yes to that request.
Incredible.
You know, Tony, it seems like a lot of people don't know. So when I worked for NBC, we went through like at least one or two Olympic cycles. But a lot of people don't know that you guys have like a campus, a battle station in Connecticut where you are doing this. But you're also covering sports that are in different time zones. So you're, you know, what, 5 hours behind what's happening? So you guys are getting up in the middle of the night to start calling a sport. I know, like, there's a desk of writers who are literally getting up in the middle of the night and having to, like, write stories on sports that they might not know a lot about. What is that like being there on the campus, the sort of the culture of being part of something, even though you aren't in Paris having a good time, you know, looking at the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, there's a mini Eiffel Tower here, which I've gotten a couple photos of.
So nice.
I think it's to scale.
It's by the coffee shop, right?
Many people are actually saying it's better than the Eiffel Tower.
Wow.
So you should look into that.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll do a deep dive for sure.
But in all seriousness, it's been eye opening to be here. I've been here for like 48 hours, and if you're on the stream watching, I'm in our little booth. We'll call all our games from this booth. This is one of 32 soundproof booths, kind of just in a big hall here. Mm. Like right next door is handball, and then over, I think two doors down is like water polo. And to your point, the hours this Olympics are better than, let's say, Tokyo, which I think is a 12-hour difference.
Right.
This is, I think, 6. And so our earliest game we'll have is a 7 a.m. game, which is a 1 o'clock local. But for instance, the guys that are doing crew are up at 3 a.m. because, you know, you got to get those boats on the water at 8 a.m. or whatever. And so there are people that are doing events as early as 3 a.m. And there's some for instance, USA Network is live for 24 hours around the clock. Mm-hmm. I think it's Lindsay Zarniak, who used to be a SportsCenter anchor. She's anchoring the, I believe, like 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. USA show daily. So I've seen her coming and going from the hotel. She gets back at 9 a.m. off the graveyard shift. So I feel lucky from a schedule standpoint. But then to your other point about the amount of people, that it's just packed here. And we have dedicated researchers to our sport. Like you said, it's usually a lot of maybe current or recent college graduates that are really hungry to get into the industry and are doing a ton of work to help us track down these bits of information that it's hard enough to find field hockey information for the domestic players, just because, you know, they go to all different schools around the country and, you know, you have to track it down there. But then the international players, even harder, and they've done an amazing job just to synthesize it so we can kind of look through it and then have at least a better idea of how to communicate the best nuggets to the public.
Tony Simeone, covering the Olympics for NBC, not officially an Olympic broadcaster yet. So in the interest of accuracy, Olympic broadcaster in waiting. I don't want to get into the minutia of field hockey, to be totally frank, but what was your field hockey knowledge prior to this? And B, what has your preparation been like to familiarize yourself with the sport?
It's a great question. The direct answer is limited. I produced it a little bit at Harvard when I worked there as a producer, but obviously not at the scale close to what we'll see on TV tomorrow. And Notre Dame doesn't have it. So I haven't even really been around it at Notre Dame. So the nature of my prep has been obviously watching a ton of old games. Fortunately, my analyst, Suzanne Bush, has called the national championship with ESPN the last 2 years. We have a dedicated research assistant, Tristan Clemens, who plays at a really high level. So there's a lot of people that have helped me kind of get up to speed. Mm-hmm. And then in watching it, you know, and I want to be careful because I don't want to compare it to too many other sports. Obviously hockey's in the name, but it's more like soccer than ice hockey is my takeaway. Simply put, 11 on 11, the field size or the pitch size is pretty similar. You'll see when you watch it on TV, and the scoring is about as frequent as soccer. You're not going to see very often 5-4, 5-2, 5-3. Yeah. It's 2-1, 3-1. And there's some, you know, nuances, which we don't have time for, but learning that big thing has been trying to pick up terminology. And it's kind of, in some ways it's daunting, right? But in other ways, it's in somewhat the essence of the Olympic experience, right? Because it's diving headfirst into, like, you guys are going to watch over the next 2 weeks. We're going to watch diving. We don't watch diving any other time of the year, but we will get locked in for a couple weeks, right? And so that,
love it.
Yeah. So that's kind of what's fun. And it's almost in some ways the most organic Olympic experience to kind of be jumping into a new sport.
Man, that's cool.
We talked about this a little bit earlier in the week because of the gold medal thing. And like I was saying, if Trey Lyles wins an Olympic medal, he plays for the Sacramento Kings, whether silver or bronze for Team Canada or gold, whatever I want him to bring it in and like show us the medal. I think it'd be really cool. But like, because it's professional and they're professional athletes, they're kind of used to this. Your sport and so many of the sports there, this is the pinnacle. This is the biggest thing for their sport. You talk about, diving. You know, Greg Louganis winning all the gold 2 years ago. Like diving is only on this stage mm-hmm. for the Olympics. How cool is that? That you get to be part of like somebody's great experience. That you get to be part of and call it.
It's amazing. And I think that's really been hammered home. And because I haven't been, around the Olympics yet, this is my first time. It's been a really good reminder being around the field hockey team, talking to the communication staff with them, hearing the players talk about it. Like you said, they didn't qualify in 21. So this is for the US at least, it's all their first ever Olympic appearance. They have the fewest Olympic appearances. Nobody else has a slate of zero. Everyone else has been there that's in their pool. So for them, it's a completely new experience just even being there. And like you said, in field hockey, you know, this is it. This is the pinnacle. Whereas you can ask, you guys were talking like 16, 17 Cavs Warriors. Mm-hmm. Like I know LeBron and KD and Steph all want to win gold. And like, it's going to actually be brutal if they don't. They're going to get a bunch of backlash. But in the end, when their careers are done, you guys are going to have segments about who had how many rings, right? There is something else in their sport that people will judge them off of. Whereas when you dive into this sport, there's Pan Am games, there's world championships that are in these people's bios. All of it were synthesized. I mean, when the common person tunes in tomorrow to watch, when I explain to them that Argentina has never won gold, but they have won bronze and silver five times, they understand that they have this one thing they need to do
right.
as a country or as a field hockey team in their country. There's no other professional aspiration that trumps that or even comes close. And so to your point, it gets you so excited just to think about the potential intensity of some of the games, because it really will be, you know, the biggest moments of their athletic lives that'll be boiled down to a few moments in Paris, which is so cool.
So have you got the Australia-Argentina game tomorrow?
No, that's the United States against Argentina.
U.S. against Argentina.
1:45 East, so that'd be 10:45 Pacific.
10:45 p.m. Pacific. Oh, I'm on the wrong... Oh, okay, here we go. I had the wrong schedule. There we go. All right, fired up. Can't wait.
You're good.
I'm tapping in for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I hope everybody else does. I have two related questions here. Does the U.S. team have a legitimate shot to medal, do you think?
I think they, I would call it this, they have a good chance of making the medal round in the quarterfinals. And then you're effectively, when you're in the final eight, if you're one win, you got to go basically win the first one and win one of the next two. I would say the odds makers don't think so. Now, they've beaten some of these teams recently. And to qualify, they beat India, Japan, New Zealand, all teams ranked above them in the world rankings.
Okay.
So to answer your question, I would say it's not likely that they medal. Very few people would pick them to medal. I think it's about a toss-up. They make the quarterfinals. And I think that, you know, at that point, I'll be all in on the, hey, it's sports, anything can happen, one game, get the right draw. Maybe you win the right match and you move on to the semis.
You'll get your Al Michaels 1980 moment.
There it is.
Oh. If you better bet if they are even sniffing qualification for the quarterfinals, it'll be, do you believe in field hockey miracles in Paris? It'll be, we'll do something. I'll have to think. I'll need to workshop something with you specifically.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like an old school Jim Nantz. You know, like he did when the Canadian Open, like glorious and free. Maybe there's a. Oh, say, can you see the semifinals tonight? You know, something like that.
That'd be gorgeous.
Is there any terms that you've had to learn that are just wild? You're like, what in the world? You know what I mean? It's like, I'm just thinking of Quidditch. Yeah, me and Kyle could sit here and call Quidditch.
Quidditch, guys.
Quidditch. You know, in some ways, if you put them on, they are carrying sticks that, you know, you can talk to them. It's almost like a broomstick.
Yeah.
There may be some Quidditch parallels here.
There's just no bludgers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire? I think that the terms actually are very useful, or they're very obvious. So like one of the shots you'll see players hit the ball. It's called a hit, obviously. Mm-hmm. But then also sometimes you'll see what's called a drag flick. And that happens on these penalty corners. And they're more, and it makes sense. Like they'll scoop the ball and then shoot it. When you think of ice hockey, the difference between a slap shot and maybe a wrist shot. Mm-hmm. The difference here is that a wrist shot is sometimes more potent and you can lift it better than a hit. which is maybe the inverse in ice hockey. Sure. All that to say, the terminology makes sense. Scoop, flip, pitch. There's no real out-of-the-box terms, but there's some really, you know, unique rules. The most notable is that you can only play the ball with one side of the stick. So you can't play it with the back side of the stick, which I never knew. If you want to hit a backhand, you just swing your stick over and hit it with the front side of the back.
Wow.
Which, if you're just watching, no one told you, I would not have known. And now you watch and you go, oh, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
But until you know that, you don't notice it.
That's, oh man.
You're just wondering why they keep swinging weird.
I'd have been like, why don't they just backhand
it? Why are they doing that?
10:45 a.m. tomorrow on NBC, the U.S. Women's field hockey team taking on Argentina in Pool B. Tony will be on the call. Last thing, Tony, you are the world's number one J.J. Redick fan. we used to joke about it all the time. It was your Clippers and my Warriors in that 2014 first round. An epic
like
seven
heyday,
game clash.
By the way, real quick, just like heyday of Warriors Clippers, like the best time ever.
It was great. And you followed J.J. Redick in his NBA career. He exited the NBA, but now he's back as the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Your thoughts on J.J. as the Lakers head coach, and are you now a Laker fan?
Well, I went to school in L.A. and spent a lot of time dealing with Lakers fans. So I'm definitely not a Lakers fan. I love J.J. Redick, the basketball player, to death. Like you would see me watching Clippers games, yelling at the screen, telling Doc to run more pin downs. We need more floppy. We're not running enough, you know, too much horns, not enough all this stuff. And I admire what he's done, obviously, like as a broadcaster, as a colleague, as a broadcasting colleague. He's done way more broadcasting than I ever could have imagined. He's done it for less time than me.
Hasn't done the Olympics though.
Hasn't done the Olympics. That's a good point. Never made the team either.
Ooh, sick burn.
He obviously does a great job with the media stuff. I think he obviously knows basketball. I think he can be a good coach. I just think that's like one of the worst situations to be going into. Mm-hmm. And the dynamic, I'm not sure that dynamic he fostered with LeBron is the best thing. Like, that's not the relationship I would pick to go into. In the end, I'm hopeful that he has success, but if to answer your question, and only you will understand, for anyone listening, like the relationship is not as close as it used to be. Mm. I used to follow his every move, his every pin down. Now it's kind of root from afar. So I don't want him to fail. I'm definitely not like a hardcore Lakers fan now, but I hope he gets through this era and gets a chance to really coach, sure. Which is, I think, the hardest part about this job. So
no doubt. Tony, thank you so much for making time in your busy schedule to join us. This was great. If the U.S. women's field hockey team makes a run, you will be our very first call.
I will come back to talk hawk anytime you want to.
Perfect.
Kyle, it's great to see you, man. I've continued success. It's awesome. I've tuned into this show before. Some of your other shows do a great job. I hope I'm a guest again someday. Thanks for having me on.
You sure will be. Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, there he goes. Tony Simeone broadcasting women's field hockey for NBC 10:45 a.m. tomorrow. I know what I'm doing. I have a morning now.
I love that he's not official until it actually happens.
I respect that. I respect that immensely.
Yeah.
Because if that's me, the second NBC reaches out and is like, hey, can you help us with this? I'd be like, Olympian.
Olympic
broadcaster here. Hello. Yeah, not Olympian. Olympic broadcaster here. Hello.
I want to know, does he get a medal if they win? Like,
no.
Come on.
No.
Maybe he gets a medal. Like a small medal.
Hang on. He's still in here. Tony, real quick before we let you go. he's hanging out.
No.
You're right.
I believe I should double check this before tomorrow, but my understanding is the coaches don't even get medals in the Olympics. That's kind of it's like the ultimate coaching sacrifice is you will go coach the Olympians to not earn a medal.
Oh no.
But like in your heart, you know.
Like Steve Kerr is not getting a medal.
Yeah, he shouldn't. Eric Spoelstra should, but that's fine.
He also has 17 rings to keep him warm, so I don't think he's worried about the medal. Yeah.
All right. Tony.
Again, here's what we talked about, right? In basketball, it's like, the rings and the medals. Field hockey, this is it. This is the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Awesome. Thanks, Tony.
All right.
If he's staying in there, I might pull him back in. Who knows?
Just keep dragging it back in.
No, I do think that's interesting, though, the whole idea of the gold medal in basketball, because it is such a, it matters, right? It matters to a resume, but not so much if Steph Curry had not played on this team. Because if you didn't know, Steph doesn't have an Olympic medal. Mm. He's never played in the Olympics. So this is his first Olympics. If he hadn't done this, if he had said, nope, I'm old as hell, I'm taking the summer off, I won't be playing, and he retired without a medal, nobody's going, oh, that impacts his standing all time.
Yeah.
But when you're discussing his resume in 20 years, and people on the radio in 20 years are scrolling his, they're going to go, oh, he's a four-time champion and an Olympic gold medalist. Like, it's that, it's a cherry on top of a great resume.
Yeah, I'd also, you know, like, I kind of feel like if Steph wins, he's going to get asked a question, what means more to you? Mm-hmm. And he's going to say, oh, it's the Olympic gold. It's not the four rings.
Yeah, putting on this jersey, representing your country, there's nothing better.
And all of us are going to be like, eh.
Boo. Like, I get why it would be special, and I get why it'd be cool, yeah, for sure. And they want to win. Like, you can tell this team
totally,
badly
totally
wants to win a gold medal.
Yeah.
I'm all in on this team, by the way. I love these dudes.
I know you're all in. I'm kind of like, I'm okay with the team. Like, they're a super team. Like, but
yeah,
the competition's stiff. Like, they haven't. I don't like that their head coach has had to come out and say that. Like, look, we need to turn up the intensity now. We're not playing very well.
Yeah,
it's like,
he's right.
Okay, some of these guys are nearing their 40s. Like, they need to show up, and you're not gonna just walk in and someone's going to hand you a gold medal. That's not the way this is going to go down. There's going to be a game or two that scares you, and there's a possibility this team doesn't win.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, look, I hope that they're walking in with the right mindset, that this is a big deal for them, that they need to kind of put themselves back on the map after, you know, the last couple of showings in international play.
But I think they know that. Especially, yeah, given how the FIBA World Cup went. That was a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
And I think these guys all know kind of what's at stake. And B, we can talk about, okay, gold medals don't really matter in the scope of a career resume, right?
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James wins this gold medal or not, he's going to go down as one of the consensus five best players ever, three or five best players ever.
Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry, same deal. Whether they win this medal or not, it's not going to impact. But on the other hand, I think for them, knowing, hey, this is it. This is the the first and last dance for this iteration of this U.S. Olympic team. And this has been anticipated since the last Olympics.
Yeah.
Everybody started doing the math and going, all right, well, let's see. It's going to be LeBron. LeBron probably won't play. He's going to be 39. And Steph might play, but how good is he going to be at that point? He's going to be 36. And here they are. They're playing at a high level. You got a guy like Anthony Edwards in there now. You got Tyrese Halliburton, who looks like he's going to be part of the program for a long time. Jason Tatum, same deal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Devin Booker, same deal. Devin Booker's, what, 28 now?
Yeah. I think
it's been around a while. So, yeah, you've got kind of this is this transition period between the younger guys who are going to be the Olympians for the next two or three games, plus the LeBron, Steph, Anthony Davis contingent. And I think those guys badly want to go in. I think they care a lot. And they might say at the end of their career, yeah, you know, nothing beats the X amount of rings. But they also don't want to go out there. And with this super team, they know, they look around the locker room, they see the talent.
Mm-hmm.
And LeBron and Steph know they're the two dudes. They might not be the two best players on the team in a vacuum, but they're the two guys that are headlining this team. And they know that if they finish anything less than gold, it's going to fall on them, which is why I think you're going to see the intensity crank up for them, and I think that's why you're going to see everybody else follow.
Yeah, I hope that that's what we see. Like, this team needs to show that they've got that second gear and that they can bring it home, because, again, the last couple of, like, international tournaments, this team hasn't exactly fared all that well.
No.
Like, it hasn't been great, and you need to... Like, if you're going to bring LeBron and you're going to bring Steph and you're going to bring KD and you're going to bring Anthony Davis, you're going to bring that group of players, like, there's no excuses here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have Joel Embiid. Like, you have so much talent that it's ridiculous. You have at least five or six players that no one else in the world has anything to throw at them.
Mm-mm.
maybe even more than that. Like, I don't know if there's a defender in the world that can lock down an Anthony Edwards or a Jason Tatum. Like, I mean, there are guys out there that can hang with Derek White, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. There are guys out there that can slow down Bam Adebayo or they can slow down Tyrese Halliburton. But there's no one out there that can stop LeBron James or Steph Curry or Anthony Davis or Joel Embiid or Tatum or Davis. Anthony Edwards. Like,
and even if a team does roll out a player who just it puts clamps on Steph.
Yeah.
Like, just he's 0-for-4 and in 26 minutes. Okay, great. But does that team have the bandwidth to then slow down everybody else you just named? And that's why I think this team should go win it. I'm going to be rooting like heck for them. They look like they're having fun. Like, they look like they enjoy playing together.
Yeah, and hanging out together.
Yeah, there was a video going around yesterday of them asking, the social media team for Team USA was asking the players who has the best nickname on the team. And it's LeBron, and Anthony Davis is sitting behind him. And they ask LeBron, and LeBron's like, best nickname on the team. And Anthony Davis like leans forward and starts rubbing his eyebrow. And LeBron's like, it's not the brow. and then like Derek White, this is the fascinating part. Derek White said, he goes, King James is elite, Chef Curry's elite. And then he goes, is D. White a nickname? And he goes, like, I don't think Book's a nickname. And then they cut to Devin Booker, and Devin Booker goes, Book. And I think it was Derek White sitting next to him goes, that's not a nickname. Book is not a nickname. I don't think that's a nickname.
I don't know. Okay, so
that's just a shortened version of your nickname. Ham is not your nickname.
No.
Hammer's a nickname.
Yeah, but is shortened versus an elongated version is different?
Yes. Like, longer is better.
I would just say that, like, as someone who grew up with a name that lends itself to many nicknames.
Of course.
You know, like Doug Christie calls me Ham Sandwich.
That's crazy.
People have called me Hamster, Hammer.
Sure.
Like all of these various. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm okay with Book. I don't know. I think D. White is kind of like lame.
No, that's your initial and your last name.
He also, under Basketball Reference, Derek White has another nickname.
Oh, please, please.
The Buffalo?
What?
What?
Oh, because he played in Colorado?
Maybe. I guess. I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Hey, De'Aaron Fox is the Wildcat now. So is Malik Monk.
Oh, they're both just the Wildcat. Hey, it's like.
Hey, Wildcat.
Wildcat.
Sabonis is the Bulldog. Which actually kind of plays.
You're too old to know the Wildcat. Wildcats was a movie in the early 80s. It was a high school football team. Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson and Goldie Hawn was their head coach.
Oh, sure.
I think it's Wesley Snipes.
We got to go.
Yeah.
We can Google that at the break. I will talk U.S. men's hoops. Also, the Niners are pissing me off. I'll tell you why next on ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply.
LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.